Hey there, it's Kona Gallagher, host of And Then They Were Gone and Day by Day True Crime Stories, and I'm here to bring you an amazing opportunity to win some incredible prizes, all for a good cause. Join the Texas Advocacy Project's The Big Game Football Squares Raffle on February 9th, 2025, and help support survivors of power-based abuse. For every $100 donation, you secure a square and a chance to win amazing prizes. You can choose from two exciting grids. The Hawaiian Paradise Grid offers a grand prize of a seven-night stay for two at a luxury resort in Oahu or the Big Island. Or play the Beachfront Mexico Grid for a chance to win a four-night, all-inclusive stay for two at a five-star Marival Luxury Resort in Banderas Bay or Nuevo Nayarit, Mexico. Your contributions help survivors understand their rights, navigate the justice system, and secure emergency protective orders. To participate, visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org and select your grid today. Don't miss out. Tune in to the Texas Advocacy Project's Facebook page on February 9th, 2025, during the game for live updates on winners. Prizes are awarded at the end of each quarter, with the grand prize at the game's conclusion. So score big for a cause. Visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org to learn more.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Today's story is one about intimate partner violence. According to her family, friends, and police and court records, Mamta Kafle's husband, Naresh Bhatt, was abusing her. He hid her documents, destroyed her phone, threatened to give their baby to social services, and physically abused her. Throughout it all, Mamta remained a kind, caring friend and a mother whose baby was her entire world. But then, sometime between July 29th and July 30th, 2024, she disappeared. Now, her husband is sitting in jail awaiting trial on the charge of concealing a dead body. We first covered Mamta's case, which is local to us, 2 weeks ago. But we've learned a lot since then. So this week, we're updating you on the case of Manassas Park, Virginia mom, Mamta Kafle. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Mamta Kafle. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan usually doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. This week's story is a continuation of the one we brought you 2 weeks ago. So if you haven't listened to that, you can get the full story. It'll be two episodes below this one in your podcast app. When we recorded that episode, some disturbing information was beginning to come out about Mamta's life with her husband, Naresh. But in the 2 weeks since, we've learned a lot more. Like our first episode on Mamta, this week's episode won't be in our usual format. It's going to be more conversational, and I'm going to go over the new timeline and everything we've learned from the police and from the two hearings that have been held in Naresh's case, both of which I've attended. We're recording this on August 28th, 2024, so this is what we know about Mamta Kafle's disappearance up to this point. So when we left off, I guess it was the day after we attended the ground search for her in Blooms Park.
Correct.
Yeah. Which is the park right next to her neighborhood in Manassas Park, Virginia. At that point, I mean, I think we had our suspicions about what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, why else were we searching the park.
Right. But, you know, we didn't really have any evidence beyond the Facebook posts that we had started to see. So people had been posting screenshots of posts that Mamta had made in various Facebook groups, basically saying she was trying to separate from her husband and asking for help. But besides that, we didn't really have much of an idea of what was going on. I think the big concern that we had at that point, too, was the police investigation.
Right, because up to that point, it seemed like they weren't doing anything.
Yes. When we were at the search at Blooms Park, that was completely civilian organized and led. There were no police officers who were searching there. And to our knowledge, I mean, there hadn't been any ground searches done by the police.
Right.
And we didn't even know if any search warrants at that point had been executed. It didn't seem as though there were. But a couple of days afterward is really when everything started happening in this case. And it was basically just the dominoes started to fall.
Right. So let's kind of talk about the timeline of what happened since we did the search.
Yeah. During the first week or so of the case, leading up to that search warrant being executed, Naresh kept on talking to reporters. So I think we talked about the first interview that he did at his home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he was standing in the doorway.
Right. Acting just kind of like annoyed by.
Yeah. And like one hand on the door trying to basically shoo the reporter away.
Yeah.
To close the door. It was really an awkward interview.
It was. And I do actually want to say something about that real quickly and answer an FAQ. So in the background of that video, you can see another person in the house.
Yeah.
And the person's it's silhouette. It looked like a man to me, but you can't really tell who it is. The reporter who did that interview has come out and confirmed that that is just somebody who was dropping off food. It is a man, and he arrived like around the same time she did.
Oh.
And so she saw him like go in, you know, with food, and it was just somebody. And I had said that on TikTok. So by the way, we are ATTWG pod on TikTok. I've been covering this case extensively over there. I've got a playlist with like 27 videos, but people keep on asking me and they said, oh, I bet that's his mistress. I bet that's, you know, his accomplice. I bet that's whoever, you know, helped him hide her or whatever. But during that time, in the early days of this investigation, people were coming over to help Naresh, to bring him food, to help with the baby, things like that, because he wasn't under, you know, intense suspicion.
Right.
So it was really the community kind of helping him out. And that's all that was. So that was like a completely innocuous situation. So I do want to point that out before we go any further. So that was that first interview. And then he gave another one that was a little bit more in depth. And in this interview, he talked a lot about his life with Mamta. He said that basically they had a very traditional marriage. So she cooked and cleaned. She was the primary caregiver for their daughter. And he's the one who worked full time and handled the finances.
Right.
The interviewer also asked what their relationship was like and if they fought a lot. And this is a direct quote from Naresh. Quote, "We had positive fights, disagreements like couples normally do, but these were positive fights. We had a big fight during January, February. I don't remember the month, but I know it was during winter," end quote. The interviewer asked what the fight was about, and Naresh said, quote, "It was a family thing. She wanted to live in a nuclear family, me, her, and our daughter," end quote. What we found out since then is that this fight, it was in February, and it did surround her in-laws because Naresh's parents came after the birth of their daughter and they were living with them.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes. So Mamta and his parents did not get along. She wanted his parents to go.
And he obviously wanted his parents to stay.
Yeah. And we learned a lot more about this fight after this interview, and including in his latest court hearing. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But he's very much trying to downplay it in this interview. And I think that's very telling because the actuality of what that fight is not at all what he's portraying it to be. But it was around this time that we got our first testimony from Momta's family about the physical abuse that she was suffering. So her mother was interviewed in Nepal, and her mother told the reporter that Momta's husband beat her and was violent with her. So that's when she left to stay with her friends. Then on August 20th, Momta's baby turned one. Momta celebrated her baby's monthly, you know, birthdays. So her friends who are holding out hope that she was out there somewhere, I think really that was the point when they really started to lose hope that she was out there okay somewhere, because they know that she never, ever would have missed her baby's first birthday if it was up to her. However, Momta's friends here in Virginia wanted to make sure that her baby still had a beautiful birthday. So Naresh actually allowed them to come over to the house and have a first birthday party for their daughter. Yeah. So Nadia, the friend who started the Find Momta Kafle Facebook group, was there. She was in the house, as well as a lot of other friends who have been involved in the search for Momta. So they all came, they celebrated the baby, and the party took place on the main level of the house, which is important later. Then the next day, August 21st, is when everything started to fall apart for Naresh. A search warrant was finally executed on the house 3 weeks after Momta was last seen and 2.5 weeks since the official missing persons report was made.
Right. And they held a press conference where basically the chief of police came out and said that basically said nothing.
Yeah, so news stations were live streaming the search. And so we saw, you know, all the police cars there, the van, people, investigators going in and out. Then, yes, that night, the Manassas Park police chief gave a press conference and said, basically, we have 3 or 4 more hours left in the house. And that was it.
Yeah. And it seemed like he was annoyed that he was even there.
Yeah, but that was the first time that he publicly said that Naresh was a person of interest.
And that he wasn't cooperating with police anymore.
Correct, yes. And that is a good point, because up to that point, every public statement from police said that everyone they had interviewed, including neighbors, friends, and Naresh himself, had all been cooperating with the investigation. But on that night, the night of August 21st, when they executed that search warrant, everything changed. I think everybody's heart kind of sank during the live stream, too, of the search warrant being executed, because we all saw investigators bring up some rolled up carpet
right
out of the home and place it in the van.
Yeah. Never a good sign.
No. So while we didn't find out anything that night via the press conference, the next morning, after they had completed the search, they believed that they found enough as evidence that Naresh Bhatt was led out of his house in handcuffs on the morning of August 22nd. His and Momta's baby was taken by social services. At first, police wouldn't even say if he was being arrested or just, you know, taken in for questioning. But we did find out later that day that he was, in fact, arrested, but not for homicide. Naresh Bhatt was arrested on one count of concealing a dead body, which in Virginia is a Class 6 felony. So the highest sentence he can get is, I believe, 5 years in prison and a $2,500 fine. So that confused a lot of people when it happened.
Well, I think it was a charge that they knew that they could get him on while awaiting further evidence.
Exactly. So, and this is, again, you know, going back to the videos that I've done on this case, like, to me, that charge, because it's so minor, it's a great one for them to start with.
Right.
To get him off the streets, to get the baby away from him.
Right.
While they're building a larger case. Because we all know about double jeopardy rules in the United States, meaning if you are tried for a crime and found not guilty, you can never be tried for that crime again. So for instance, if they were to charge him with homicide and didn't have enough evidence, that evidence could get dismissed by a judge before it even goes to trial. And there are two types of dismissal. And in one type of dismissal, the prosecution would be free to refile the charges at a later date. But with the other type of dismissal, they wouldn't be.
Right.
So they could have lost it all at the very beginning before they even got to trial. And then there's, of course, the chance of getting to trial, getting a not guilty verdict, and again, losing that chance to ever charge him with that crime. So what they did instead was they charged him with concealing a dead body, got him in jail, and started to build their case.
When they arrested him, I think it came out that in his house, his and the baby's passports were out in the open.
Yeah.
He was packing.
Mm-hmm.
And his house was in disarray, correct?
Yes. So that's all information that we found out a few days later at his arraignment. So let's get into that. Naresh was arraigned the next day, August 23rd, in Prince William County. And like I said in the intro, I was able to attend that hearing. The arraignment was really informative because that's the first time that we heard from the Commonwealth's attorney what evidence they had against Naresh that led to the arrest. And so we got to find out specifically what they found in the home. Now, I know one of the things that I talked about in our first episode on Mamta was how pissed I was about the quote unquote official timeline that kept on getting repeated in news stories. Because in that official timeline, it said that she disappeared on July 31st.
Right.
But by that point, we knew that nobody had spoken to Mamta since July 29th.
Right.
So her friends last heard from her on the 28th. Her last social media posts were on the 28th. But we later found out that her mother spoke to her on the night of the 29th.
Right, but wasn't there some confusion as to what that actual day was because she was in Nepal?
Yes, so it was the 30th in Nepal, it was the 29th here.
Okay.
So it was the 29th that she last spoke to Mamta, and what we just found out actually very recently is that the next time Mamta's mother tried to call her was like 5:30 a.m. on the 30th our time. And
straight to voicemail.
It went, right? That's when it was already going straight to voicemail. Exactly. So the last time anybody besides Naresh spoke to Mamta was on the 29th. But when police officers came to do that first welfare check on August 2nd, he said that the last time he saw his wife was on July 31st. Now, in the arraignment, we got some more details on what else he told the police during that welfare check. So they came to do the welfare check, and they obviously asked if his wife was home, and he said no. He said that she was visiting family either in New York or Texas.
Okay.
And that she didn't have her phone on her because she had destroyed it before she left.
Any follow-up questions with that?
Yes. Yeah, so that's when Naresh got into the whole thing that we talked about before of him saying, oh, she does this.
Right.
She'll take off for days at a time. She's done this before. I'm not really worried about it. I don't know what the follow-up questions were about her destroying her phone before she left. But yeah, that was his story. She's visiting family and he expected her back on Sunday, which was August 4th.
Okay.
Okay. So
does she actually have family in New York or Texas?
No, she sure doesn't.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I thought she was here alone.
Yeah, she was here alone. She doesn't have any blood relatives in the U.S. So right away, Naresh is lying to the cops. He also lied about her phone being destroyed prior to her leaving. And it was quickly apparent that the July 31st date that he gave was also not true. His initial story was that they had dinner together July 31st. Everything was great. He put the baby to bed. He heard her downstairs doing dishes, things like that. And then he did say later that he thought he heard her early in the morning on August 1st, but he never saw her. So I guess, you know, the idea was that she had left for work prior to him getting up and coming downstairs. Now, while that search warrant that was executed at his home on the 21st was, you know, the first physical search warrant on the home, it sounds as though police had been getting other search warrants because they had phone records, and what it seems like they had also were some financial records, because at that arraignment on August 23rd, they already knew where Momta's phone had last pinged, and it wasn't at their home in Manassas Park where she allegedly destroyed her phone. It was in Loudoun County. And the day that it last pinged in Loudoun County, Naresh put himself in the area at a cafe. We also learned that on July 30th, he went to a Walmart in Chantilly, Virginia, which is not the closest Walmart to his house. It's in a different county. And he bought a 3-pack of knives. At his bond hearing, we learned that it was a small, medium, and a large knife. Two of those knives, we don't know which two, but two of those knives have not been recovered. Then, on July 31st, he was seen in a Loudoun County Walmart buying cleaning supplies. The Commonwealth's attorney elaborated in the bond hearing on as to what those cleaning supplies were. They included Lysol, disinfectant wipes, air freshener, and the Little Tree car air fresheners, and a bottle of carpet cleaner. And back to what you were saying about the suitcases, when they went to the home to execute the search warrant, the investigators said that the home was in disarray and that Naresh's passport and their baby's passport were out in plain sight. There was also at least one suitcase packed and empty hangers in the closet with clothing missing.
Yeah, I mean, he was going to run.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no other way about it. That's what that shows, is that he was going to take the baby, and who knows where they were going.
It seemed as though that is what was going to happen. Now, he had already talked to Momta's parents on, I believe it was August 15th, about sending their baby to Nepal so that her parents could look after the baby, because this was just apparently too much for him to do on his own.
Jesus, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I don't know, you know, if he had had further conversations in that week about that, but both of the passports were out. The investigators certainly thought that, like you said, he was planning on running. So that's what they saw when they first entered the house, right? Then they went and actually did the forensic examination. And that is where things got dark. When investigators went up to the primary bedroom that Momta and Naresh shared, they came across kind of a weird sight. They saw their bed and a glider, like a rocking chair that you usually use with infants, both moved in front of the walk-in closet. So the bed was blocking the door to the closet, and the glider was right in front of the bed in kind of a weird place. So investigators thought, that's a strange design choice. So they moved the rocking chair and the bed, and underneath found pink stains that to them appeared to be blood that someone had attempted to clean. We found out in the bond hearing that right next to where the stain is was that bottle of carpet cleaner, and it was almost empty. Police used Blue Star technology on the carpet. Now, Blue Star technology, for those of you who've heard of luminol, this is kind of the next generation of that. It's a chemical that you put on surfaces that you believe may have blood or other, you know, body fluids,
right,
on it, and it will basically light up underneath black light, and you can see if there is blood. The thing about luminol is that it reacts to blood and, say, bleach in the same way. So when something lights up, it's kind of hard to determine at that point what exactly you're looking at, right?
Right.
Blue Star is supposed to be more advanced and apparently doesn't react in the same way to, say, bleach as it does to blood. So while you still do have to do additional testing, it's more likely that what appears to be blood under the light is actually blood, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they shown the blue star on that. It did register as blood. What appeared to be blood then continued into the ensuite bathroom. They did the blue star technology in that bathroom and found what appeared to be blood all over the floor. Then they went into the shower and the entire floor of the shower, they said, lit up, showing that there was potentially a great deal of blood there. This led them to physically remove the tub. And when they did that, they saw what appeared to be blood that was visible to the naked eye, meaning blood that had not been cleaned, that had been missed. So they took samples of all of this and sent it to the lab. They also cut out the part of the carpet where they had the pink stain and took that to the lab. What we found out at the bond hearing later was that after they cut that section of carpet out and they turned it over, you could see dark red stains where it appeared that the blood had seeped through the carpet. There was further evidence besides the passports and the suitcases and all of that, that Naresh was potentially planning on fleeing. On August 19th, he sold his blue Tesla to CarMax. And the Tesla's been a big thing. And we talked about this in the last episode because that was one of my sticking points. Because I was saying 2 weeks ago, like, they need to get the records from Tesla because Teslas record everything. They have multiple cameras. They keep logs. They have GPS. Like, they will record not only video, but data of where you've been, how long you were there, all of your routes.
Yeah, it's like a murderer's worst vehicle to ever use.
Period. Because you are being tracked. So my big question on the last episode was, where's the Tesla? Where's the Tesla? Where is the Tesla? Do they have a warrant for the information? Well, we learned at the arraignment that he sold the Tesla on August 19th. And in addition, he had also spoken to two individuals about buying his house. So those are two pieces of evidence that led the prosecution to believe that he was, in fact, going to flee. Now, Naresh had a court-appointed defense attorney. In his defense to the evidence that the prosecution put on at this arraignment was that basically the charge is concealing a dead body. We don't actually know that Mamta's dead.
Which is true.
Which is very true. He was asking the question that a lot of people have been asking, which is, how can you charge somebody with concealing a dead body when you don't have a dead body? He pointed out, okay, you found stains in the home that appear to be blood, but you don't actually know that any of it's blood, which at the time was true because the testing hadn't been performed yet.
Right.
They just believed it to be blood. He also said that, yeah, he can sell the car, he can sell the house. That doesn't mean anything. He was having money problems. He just needed cash. Most of all, he was in a flight risk because it took the cops almost a month to actually do this search warrant. And he had plenty of time to flee before that if he had wanted to.
I mean, it's all true. That's not a great defense, though. Like, he could have left sooner, so he's not a flight risk.
I don't know. I mean, I think that's a fair point, though, because he could have.
Yes, but that's your defense? Like, you couldn't come up with some sort of tie to the community to keep him there?
Well, let's keep in mind, too, that this wasn't the trial, right? So this is just the arraignment.
That's fair.
And it wasn't the bond hearing either.
Right.
So they weren't really determining that at this point.
That's true.
But, you know, his points, I think, were valid. And his points were like, listen, he's not a flight risk. He could have run already. And two, you don't know if Mamta's dead. So how can you charge him with concealing a dead body? So he was just saying, listen, if you're going to bring further charges, then that's one thing. But on this particular charge, there's no way you should be holding my client in jail. And again, it's a class 6 felony, which is just a step above a misdemeanor.
Right.
So this isn't a serious charge. At that point, you know, Naresh was pleading not guilty and a hearing was set for bond. And that was set for the following Monday, which was August 26th. And this was the hearing that would determine whether or not Naresh stayed in jail until his preliminary hearing on October 24th, or if he could be free until then. I also attended the bond hearing on August 26th. While the arraignment started with the prosecution presenting their evidence and then the defense responding to it, this was the opposite. In the bond hearing, the defense presented their reasoning why Naresh should be let out on bail pending his next hearing, and the prosecution responded with their evidence as to why he shouldn't. Now, the prosecution had two things that they could prove. One was that he was a flight risk, and the second was that he was a danger to the community. If they were able to prove either of these to the judge's satisfaction, again, we're not at a full trial, there's not a jury, this is just to the judge's satisfaction, then he could be denied bond. The defense started out by going back to Naresh selling his car and trying to sell his home and why that isn't as suspicious as it looked. And that was actually their entire story at this point, was like, listen, the optics of this are bad, but that doesn't mean that he's guilty of anything. It just means that this looks bad. There are actually reasonable explanations for all of it. So the reasonable explanation that they had for him selling these items was that simply he couldn't afford them anymore. According to the defense, after Mamta's disappearance, he had to stay home from work and take care of their baby. So he stopped attending work. And it sounds like they were saying it was a combination of him having to take care of the baby and the whole media circus that was surrounding her disappearance. So after some period of time, I don't know exactly when it happened, Naresh was fired from his job. Now, Naresh worked as a government contractor with a security clearance. And this is a government security clearance. I'm not sure if it was a secret or a top secret clearance. I'm not sure of the level, but he did have a security clearance. He worked in IT as a contractor for the federal government. This really comes into play here in a few minutes. So he got let go from his job. Now, he still is, to my knowledge, receiving disability benefits from the Army. And in addition, he had another income stream, which hasn't been talked about in either of the hearings, but he and Mamta had tenants living in their basement. And the tenants are actually still living there as of this recording. So I don't know how much they were paying, but you know, we would assume that they were paying some amount of money in rent. So despite this, Naresh's defense said that he couldn't afford his house and his car. He said that the mortgage on their home was $6,000 a month.
Jesus.
And that his car payment was $1,200 a month plus insurance. So he sold his car because he needed money. He was trying to sell his house because he needed money. He also said that the idea of him fleeing to Nepal, which, you know, is seemingly what people were saying he was going to do, Nepal is where he's from. His defense said he's not a Nepali citizen. Naresh is a U.S. citizen. And in addition to that, Nepal has an extradition treaty with the U.S. So even if he were to flee to Nepal, they could bring him back.
They could get him, yeah.
Yeah. So he's like, that doesn't make any sense. He wasn't trying to flee. The defense attorney, Mr. Ben Alberham, then went on to attack the quote unquote blood evidence that the prosecution had talked about in the previous hearing. He said that they had only provided three photos, and what those photos showed were minuscule amounts of blood. He said, you know, the prosecution tried to paint this picture of pools of blood all over the house, and then they gave us these three photos that looked like it could have been a nosebleed. He also said that the Commonwealth didn't have probable cause because they don't have the body. His direct quote was, "Blood is not a body or body part," end quote.
I mean, these are all valid points.
And he said that even if it was blood and it was Mamta's blood, it didn't prove anything. Because again, he's going back to it's like it's drops of blood. It's her house. Like,
yeah,
that doesn't show you anything other than she bled in her own home at one point, which everybody's done. He then said that he believed that his client was only arrested because of the media frenzy. Media frenzy was a term that was used several times during this hearing. He said that Naresh was only arrested because of the media frenzy and because the Manassas Park Police Department was under extreme pressure from the public, which they were. I mean, that part's absolutely true. They were under extreme pressure. And so he's saying they didn't have probable cause and basically they shouldn't have arrested Naresh in the first place on this charge. Then it was time for the prosecution to get up there, and we learned a lot more information than we had the previous Friday. So we got a better timeline, basically. And we learned that July 8th, 2024 was Mamta's first day at work at this new hospital. So she had previously worked for Inova Fairfax and then started at the UVA Prince William Hospital. But she had made such an impression on her coworkers and supervisor that on August 1st, which is only like 3 weeks after she started her job, I mean, they barely had a chance to get to know her, but she made such an impression that when she didn't show up for work that morning, her supervisor was so concerned that she called the police that day to do a welfare check, the day she didn't show up for work.
That also makes you wonder if she had mentioned anything about the abuse that she was suffering at home to her coworkers.
It sounds like her coworkers knew things, but it's unclear to what extent they knew about the abuse. So the police didn't do the welfare check until the next day, August 2nd, which we know. And then it was August 5th that he actually reported her missing. Now, he had told the police during that welfare check that he expected her back on Sunday the 4th. When she didn't return on the 4th, he actually did text the officer who came to do the welfare check. The officer didn't get back to him. So the next day, Monday, Naresh did call and file that missing persons report. He then had an interview with Detective Ventura of the Manassas Park Police Department on August 6th. And said that Mamta's clothes, passport, social security card, and green card were missing. The prosecution then got into more cell phone data. So they expanded on the data that they had talked about in the arraignment. And they said that they went and looked at the historical data going up to July 29th between Mamta's phone and Naresh's phone and found that they had constant communication for those 4 days leading up to the 29th. And that establishes a pattern. It establishes a pattern that these two talked frequently throughout the day and that that all stopped on July 29th and never started up again. They said that her phone was not sending or receiving data from July 30th to August 2nd, which matches up with her friends and family stories saying that when they would call her, it would go straight to voicemail. You know, they couldn't get through to her on those days. The way it initially sounded was that her phone basically was turned off or died or whatever 29th and never came back on again. But what we learned was that her phone actually did come back on August 3rd, and her phone called Naresh's phone on August 3rd.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then nothing. They then got into the blood evidence. And the first thing the Commonwealth's attorney said was that the three pictures that showed, you know, minuscule amounts of blood that could have been from a nosebleed, those are the pictures that showed blood drops that were visible to the naked eye. Of which there were not many, you know, because sure, most of it had been cleaned. Right. Exactly. But she said, though, that's different from the pools of blood that we did find through using the Blue Star technology, as well as blood spatter on the bathroom wall. She said that it was Prince William County who performed that search and that one of the investigators who was there had been on the job since 2011 and said that she had never seen that much blood. The big thing that we learned was that between the arraignment on Friday and this bond hearing on Monday, that they had done initial testing on the carpet and the other samples of what they believed to be blood. And the presumptive tests did, in fact, come back positive for blood. So that pink stain on the carpet, the what appeared to be pools of blood in the shower were actually blood. What we're still waiting on at this point is the DNA testing to know whose blood it is. But it is blood. It's not some other substance. There are also two windows by the bathtub, and one of the windows had a white shade on it. The other window didn't. During the search, the investigators went into the closet and found a matching white shade with what appeared to be drops of blood on it. They also found the cleaning supplies that he was seen on CCTV buying from Walmart, including the carpet cleaner, which I mentioned was found next to the blood stain on the carpet, the Lysol, the disinfectant wipes, and the plug-in air fresheners. They then went into why they believe that he should be held on bond, saying that he is both a danger to the community and a flight risk. And that's when we got back to that February fight. Because this February fight that Naresh kind of spoke about in that interview, that Mamta's mother said involved him beating her, that led Mamta to stay with a friend, we learned at the bond hearing that police were actually called to their house that day. Police were called for a disorderly, and they spoke with Mamta. She said that her husband wouldn't give her her documents and that he destroyed her phone. So when he told Detective Ventura on August 6th that Mamta's documents were missing, she had told police back in February that he was withholding them from her. Now, at this point, the defense did object and said that this was all hearsay and it was not relevant to the matter at hand. But the judge overruled it. And the Commonwealth's attorney said that the court can consider what is relevant, including the history of domestic abuse. So that was the first time that we officially heard in court that Mamta was a victim of domestic abuse at the hands of her husband. She then went on to say that Mamta's close friends said that Mamta was a victim of intimate partner violence and that she did have bruises on her in the months leading up to her disappearance. There are also the Facebook posts that we talked about in the last episode where she said she was trying to leave her husband, but he threatened to give their baby to social services if she did. There was another post in which she said that he drained their joint bank account. She was looking for help. She was looking to figure out how she could get out of this relationship, but didn't believe that she could. Her friends said that she also had episodes of depression in the recent months. As their final proof as to why he's a danger to society, the prosecution dropped a bombshell. They said that a lot of agencies have offered to help in this case and that they were contacted by the Secret Service. Because remember, Naresh worked as a government contractor and his company apparently did some work with the White House. So the Secret Service got in touch and said, hey, you interested in some of his Google searches? And the prosecution read out two of them. The first one, which is a direct quote, was, how long does take to get married after spouse dies? End quote. The second one was something to the effect of what happens after the death of a spouse. And these searches were done back in April of 2024, about 3 months prior to Mamta's disappearance.
So a lot of premeditation there.
That's what it seems like, yes. And then when that became public on Monday, you know, people, of course, went crazy. They're like, oh, my gosh, he has a mistress. The mistress helped him. You know, that's who you need to find.
There's no evidence of that.
Well, there isn't. And I've been looking into that over the past couple of days because I was like, did I miss something? Because there's just so much happening that it was sure. Incredibly possible that I did miss something. But I have not been able to find any evidence that he did have a local mistress. Other than the fact that he did apparently drive to Baltimore on July 28th, returning on July 29th, like at 1 in the morning, and there's a possibility that he was going there to see a woman, but that is very unconfirmed. We do know that he did go to Baltimore, but we don't know exactly who he was seeing or what he was doing there yet. But other than that, there hasn't been any evidence of another woman acting as his accomplice or anything like that. Obviously, a lot more evidence is going to be coming out, but at this point, we do not know that. And we have established that the person who is seen in that initial interview was just somebody who was bringing by food. Because again, a lot, like I said, a lot of people are thinking, oh, that's his mistress, you know, or that it was his mother. That's another thing. So in the February 24th incident, Naresh's mother has also been accused of beating Mamta. And so a lot of people are saying, okay, that's his mother in the background. She's there. She helped him. Naresh's parents went back to Nepal at the end of May, and they are still there. They were in Nepal when Mamta disappeared. So that was the evidence that they gave to show that Naresh was a danger to society. The evidence of him being a flight risk is pretty much what we already went over with the passports and the suitcases and things like that. On 8/15, he did tell police that he was going to send Nima to Nepal. So that's the only other thing that we learned, is that was the date that he told police that. The prosecutor ended by saying, quote, "It's easy to ignore one fact or two facts. Looking at all the circumstances, this defendant was getting ready to leave," end quote. She then closed out by saying that, yes, while they have not found Mamta, while they do not have a body, that they believe that the amount of blood that they did find in the home is indicative of injuries that are not survivable. She also said that the defense is conflating probable cause with beyond a reasonable doubt, meaning that they absolutely have probable cause to hold him on this charge. But yes, they haven't presented all their evidence yet. We haven't gotten the DNA tests back yet. So we don't know at this point, beyond a reasonable doubt, whether or not Naresh is guilty of this crime. But that's not what this hearing was for. She also said that there's every indication that Mamta is no longer alive, and that the Commonwealth can prove a homicide with no body, so they can prove this charge too, even if they don't find her. Before the judge made her decision, the defense got up to do a final response and basically continued to say that the prosecution was grasping, that they didn't have the evidence. And they did start to lay the groundwork for what could be Naresh's defense once this goes to trial. He said that there's a host of reasons blood could be in the bathroom, and that evidence may show in the future that somebody in the home had medical problems that led to that amount of blood being in the bathroom.
Medical problems being what? The amount of blood to be considered an unsurvivable injury?
Yeah.
To just be like, oh, this is normal. I just bleed a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's the only indication of like a possible future defense that I saw. He also said that Blue Star technology does have false positives.
Sure. I mean, I can believe that, but it's null and void, you know, once the DNA tests come back.
And the other thing that he did was he said that if they do remand him, he wants to move his hearing date up because he doesn't believe that his clients should stay in jail until his next hearing, which is scheduled for October 24th. Now, the judge to that said, if you'd like to move the trial date up, you're more than welcome to put that motion in. That's not what we're doing here today. But if he were to put in that motion and he were to have it granted, that would be excellent for the defense, because so much of what the prosecution's case is going to hinge on is the DNA testing. And that does take a lot of time. And during the arraignment, the defense attorney wasn't even confident that they would have that back by October 24th. So if he manages to get that date moved up, there's a good chance that they definitely won't have that back. And so his hope is that if they don't have those lab results back, that this case will get tossed out at the preliminary hearing. After that, the judge did determine that Naresh Bhatt is both a danger to the community and a flight risk, and he was remanded to jail. So he is still in custody. His and Mamta's daughter was with social services, but in an update, I found out that Mamta's mother was granted an emergency visa, and she just arrived in the States yesterday, which was August 27th. In terms of if she's going to be able to take custody of the baby, we don't know yet. That's, you know, something for social services to determine. And there's a lot that goes into it, into that, considering that their baby is a U.S. citizen and Mamta's family are not.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that would just have to be handled through family court.
Yeah. So that's going to be a whole other side issue. But I did find out this morning before we recorded this that since the baby was taken away from the home by social services, that she has been placed with somebody who Mamta knew.
Oh, good.
Yes. So a trusted individual has been able to foster the baby while all this is getting figured out.
Good. That's very good.
Yeah. So that hearing was on Monday. We found out yesterday on Tuesday that there's going to be another hearing tomorrow, the 29th of August, and it's just a motion. So this could either be that motion that I was just...
the defense motion.
Yeah, that it's probably the defense motion either to move the preliminary hearing date up or to appeal the bond decision.
Yeah.
Because at the end of this bond hearing, the judge just say, hey, you're welcome to appeal if you want, basically.
Yeah.
So my guess is it's going to be one of those two. So I am going to be attending that hearing as well and going live on TikTok after that. Since we found out in the at the arraignment that Naresh sold his car on August 19th, one of the big questions has been, where's the car? Can they get the car? Can they get the data from the car? And we didn't have any answers on that. You know, there have been rumors that they were able to get the car back from CarMax, that it hadn't been sold to a new owner yet, but that hadn't been confirmed. But finally, last night on August 27th, the Manassas Park chief of police gave an interview and he said that they did have the Tesla in their possession, which means that they are able to do a physical and forensic search of the car.
Yeah, they need to.
Absolutely. And in terms of any data that's on the car, they have sent a warrant to Tesla and they are waiting to hear back from Tesla to get that data. So we're still waiting on that. But one of the very important reasons, other than the data, that it's crucial that the police have the car is because there could be physical evidence in the car.
I, for one, think that they will find evidence in the car. I think he moved her.
Right.
The phone call?
Oh, yeah.
You said that her phone rang to his phone.
On August 3rd.
On August 3rd. He moved her.
Yeah. I think he did. And I think he was trying to be slick and call him to make people think she was still alive.
Either that or it was a butt dial.
It could have been. But the phone was off for 4 days, you know?
Oh, that's true.
So I think that he did that trying to be smart.
But I do think that he moved her. I think she was somewhere in the house. And with all of the mounting pressure, he moved her.
Yeah. And when he sold the car, he had a friend pick him up to, you know, and go with him to CarMax and then drive him home after that. And the friend has said, and this is unconfirmed, so, you know, do take this with a grain of salt. But apparently the friend said that before he was going to sell the car, he was cleaning it out and he had a bag of trash. And the friend said that the bag of trash smelled terrible. And we do know that he bought auto air fresheners
right at
the Walmart on July 31st. So something was still in the car that smelled bad on August 19th when he sold it. And we saw that he didn't do a terribly thorough job of cleaning up in the house. So it stands to reason that he didn't do a terribly thorough job cleaning up the car either. So even if CarMax had already gone and cleaned it up themselves, which is, you know, just standard for when you're turning over a car, I think that once you rip out the carpet and, you know, interior of the car, I think there's a good chance that they will find something. So that's what we found out last night. And we also found out that on August 27th, another search warrant was executed at the home. Witnesses who were there saw the tenants going into the home through the back basement entrance. So that's why it's believed that they are still living there. The police chief in his interview said that they did execute the new warrant and that they did recover additional evidence. Witnesses saw investigators bringing a ladder into the home, and they believe that they were searching the attic. In terms of actual evidence that was found, you know, he wasn't speaking to that last night, of course. So we're going to have to wait to find out what it is that they recovered. One of the questions that the reporters asked the chief last night was whether or not they are working with other jurisdictions. He did mention, of course, that they are working with other agencies, including the Secret Service, which we knew about from the hearing. He said Customs and Border Patrol as well, which is interesting because, again, Naresh is a U.S. citizen.
Right.
So I don't know how they came into it. He's also been speaking with Fairfax County Police. One of the Walmarts that he visited was in Fairfax County, and he has been known to go fishing in Great Falls. He also used to live in that area, so that could also be why they're involved.
Right,
they've also and they've also been talking to Loudoun County sheriffs because, again, he went to one of the Walmarts in Loudoun County. Momta's phone last pinged near a body of water in Loudoun County. People have been asking all week since we learned about that last ping in Loudoun if police have been doing ground searches or searching those bodies of water. And I want to make it clear, they did not specify which body of water it pinged near. But the Potomac River.
Yeah,
but the Potomac River does go into Loudoun County. And the Potomac River, where it goes into Loudoun County, is near CarMax. I don't know if it's the same CarMax that he went to, but it's near CarMax. It's near Walmart. Like, those are all within a couple miles of each other. So that could be it. He did say that they're speaking with Loudoun, but that they haven't yet started doing searches in Loudoun County. So hopefully those searches will start soon. If they believe that that could be where he disposed of Momta. Now, as we were recording this, we did get official word from Momta's family's immigration attorney that Momta's mother and brother have arrived in the States and have been reunited with their baby.
Oh, good.
Yes, with Momta's daughter. She released a statement saying, quote, "We would like to let everyone know that Momta's mom and brother has been reunited with Mini Momta. We request community and media to give them privacy. They will speak up when they feel comfortable. We will not be disclosing their location at this time. They are dealing with unimaginable pain, so please be kind to them. Hashtag justice for Momta," end quote. But we mentioned earlier in the show that Momta's friend has temporary custody of the baby. That is still the case. So while Momta's family has been reunited with the baby, like we said, that's just going to be a huge process. So it sounds like Momta's friend is retaining custody for the time being as they work out everything else. But at least Momta's family is here and they are with the baby. When he was speaking to reporters yesterday, the police chief also praised the community's efforts in coming together and publicizing Momta's case. And he said twice, which it's like, okay, I get where he's going, but he's like, oh yeah, it really gives us the motivation to investigate this. And
what?
Yeah.
So the public has to reach out and make an outcry of support for a victim for you to get the motivation to investigate? Like,
yeah,
that's kind of a fucked up thing for him to say.
It is, but it's true. And we've talked about this time and time again in the 4 years that we've been covering unsolved missing persons cases. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. And a lot of times the investigating agencies do need the public pressure in order to keep the case on the forefront. And it's so easy for them. I said this in the last episode. It's so easy for them to put it at the bottom of the pile when it's not immediately evident what happened. And I think that's what would have happened here. And I think that's exactly what Naresh was counting on. And you and I talked about this. Like, I got a little heated last night because when we were talking about this, because it makes me so angry, because I do 150% believe that he thought he could kill his wife, do a half-assed job of cleaning up after himself, come up with some bullshit story, and people would believe him. He didn't think Mamta would be worth anybody's time. He didn't think that the police would do anything except for believe his story. Mamta is an immigrant. She's only been in this country for 3 years. She has no blood relatives here other than her one-year-old daughter. He thought that it would get swept under the rug, that he could get rid of his current wife, find a new one, and just live happily ever after. But he was wrong. And we're proving every single day that he was wrong, because Nadia, because of the Nepali community, because everybody said, absolutely not. We care about Mamta. We care about this woman, even though she's a complete stranger to most of us. We're not going to let that happen. And when his defense attorney got up in court the other day and said that, you know, the police have been under pressure, you're damn right they are, as well they should be. Yes, there's been a media frenzy, because there should be. The issue of intimate partner violence has nothing to do with his nationality or anything like that, right? Because we know that people of all races, of all nationalities, perpetrate this. This is a universal truth in our world. People from every walk of life can be the perpetrator or the victim of intimate partner violence. And he just happened to choose a victim who touched the lives of so many people and made such an impression on them in a short period of time that they weren't going to let it go, that they weren't going to believe his story. And so I do have faith that while Mamta might not be here anymore, she is going to get justice. I'll continue to follow her case every step of the way. This is local for us. I'm going to attend all of the hearings that I can, and I will be posting more videos over on TikTok and uploading to YouTube when I can. So follow along there for daily updates, and we will get justice for Mamta. Mamta Kafle has been missing from Manassas Park, Virginia, since July 30th, 2024. She is a 28-year-old Nepali woman who is approximately 5 feet tall and 135 pounds. Her husband, Naresh Bhatt, is currently in jail and has been charged with concealing a dead body. If anyone has information about Mamta's disappearance or Naresh's activities between July 30th and August 3rd, please contact the Manassas Park Police Department at 703-361-1136 or email c.ventura, at manassasparkva.gov. If you or someone you know is a victim of intimate partner violence, please contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline. It provides 24/7 confidential support, safety planning, and referrals to local resources. You can reach them by phone at 1-800-799-7233 or text START to 88788. You can also visit them at thehotline.org. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!